Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Another Monday, Edwin is with me again. Hi Edwin, how are you doing?
Well, happy Freedom Day, Martin. Happy Freedom Day, or is it the beginning of a new community out in the mountains?
Well, that's right. And isn't it your birthday as well? Is that right?
No, the first of December, that's when we go full on.
Okay. That's further down the track.
Yeah, that's Gladys's birthday present to me. That's full on. Yeah, get naked, go happy, go hard, go all the way.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're going halfway at the moment. Though this is interesting. I don't know what it was like up your way, but over the weekend there was a huge swell of traffic down here. So a lot of people, I think, broke out early.
Look, I was told that they got early tickets for Kmart. For midnight opening of Kmart, and some pubs open up at midnight as well, or something like that. It was crazy all over. You know, it's as I keep on saying, Martin, you just got to dong on a Guernsey, and as long as you don't carry a football with you, because that's a contagion spot. That's what they call it, the super spreader. The footballs are the super spreaders. It's just dong on a Guernsey, a mask, and you'll be right.
Absolutely. We discussed that last week. That was your theory about how to dodge a bullet, as it were. But, of course, the other point is I don't think that many people are being checked, or our businesses are checking at the moment.
No. We are certainly going to speak a little bit more as to what the so-called industry, the greatest industry body, real estate industry body in the entire universe, if not galaxy, is putting out to its members, and it's pushing the government to mandate for the agents to do. That is going to be very, very interesting. I can just foresee a lot of punch-ups at auctions. I mean, I already almost get into punch-ups as it is, let alone with more pressure of the passports being able to go in, not go in. You know, do you have a condom, a mask on or not? You know, are you going to have safe communal gatherings of 50 people in a house, in a lounge room to conduct the auction, or is it just going to be, three pelicans with standing 10 meters apart? Who knows, Martin? It's going to be an eye-opener. It's going to be mayhem, I think, for the next 3 weeks with the real estate industry particularly, let alone all the other poor bastards that are on the front line of coffee shops and shopping centres and everywhere else where the government's asking them to be the watchdogs of this whole passport rollout.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, there's a few interesting things going on. And the other thing I'm quite amused about is everybody's sort of fixated up in China, or talking about China and Evergrande, right? But they're missing the big one, right? They're missing the big... Our coal is being now imported again.
Yeah, well, that's how WeChat Chatterers put it out early last week, Martin. I shared it with you and I think it was Tarek as well, the fact that, there's been WeChat Chatterers that are based in China being informed us early last week that they're buying, the secret negotiations on hand. And it's only now that that some of the mainstream and other commentators have putting it out on Twitter. I mean, the Australian mainstream, the AFR will take them another week or two to catch up. But we get the news from America that generally comes a bit earlier than the AFR and the Sydney Morning Herald. But WeChat Chatterers are on the ball. They saw this, or they know of very, very low key negotiations that have been taking place already. Because at the end of the day, where else are they going to get the coal from?
Absolutely. Well, of course, the next thing is you'll be able to export your potatoes. You'll have so many of them, right? You'll be able to push your own up to China.
Mate, yeah, going hell for leather, Martin. Number two, the raised veggie bed is up and going. And I think this one's going to be the potatoes. You know, I've got some deep topsoil on there, and which is what potatoes need. Now I just got to work out what type of potatoes I want to grow there, Martin. Just got hampered a little bit today with the cold, rainy weather, so I wasn't able to get out and about and just start chasing some potato seeds whatever it is that you planned, potato bags. So potato chips. There you go. I like the salt and vinegar. I'm going to grow some salt and vinegar, some Smith's crisps, and Doritos. How's that?
Well, that's right. But I think you'll find what they do is they sort of come up in a tree, right? And then those new chip packets sprout from each, and then you pick them, right? Ready sorted, in the packet.
Yeah, like the spaghetti trees, the spaghetti vines. I'm learning as I go. But one thing for sure, Martin, it's getting scary out there. And as much as I'm having a bit of fun and we can jest. Look, I'm calling mid 2022. I'm calling lines to for food rationing. And this is the thing, Martin. This is the thing. It's not so much that we're not growing enough food here. It's not so much that we don't have enough livestock here. It's not so much that we don't produce enough here. It's all about the packaging, and it's all about, and where does the packaging come from? The packaging comes from China, comes from overseas. And as you and Tarek have been talking about over and over again, and drumming into the into the community, that the fact that the supply chains are broken and things are going to get worse before they get better. So this is going to be the conundrum. Now, on top of that, we've got issues with this the V passport. Let's just call it the VP. And we've got issues with that. And how much more are the supply chains going to be broken? How much more is there going to be, the support staff that look after the businesses to serve customers, how much more is all that going to be disrupted? So let me also put it out there, don't be surprised if there's another bug that's going to affect the livestock, that's going to be a world pandemic. And my Nostradamus genes telling me that mid 2022 it's going to be potentially, in my opinion, is going to be dicey with regards to not only supply chains, and dicey with regards to the supplying of food, the movement of people around. So look, it's all I can say is continue to prepare because it's not over. It's we're in the eye of the storm, the quiet before the proverbial hits the fan.
No, I agree with that. And in my small way, I've had a few supply chain issues insofar that I wanted some months ago to get another small piece of kit for the studio, right? So it's basically something that would allow me to convert video standards from one thing to another thing. And I put an order in, I don't know, end of June, right? And it wasn't in stock. I chased it the other day. And they said, oh, no, there's none coming, right? So we sort of hatched up an alternative, and I ended up managing to find an alternative at the same distributor, different product. And then blow me, the ones I ordered in June, they arrived as well. So, I mean, it's all over the place. Right? But the point is, you can't rely on things that you want being available. That's the point, right? You've got to assume that it's going to take a long lead in time, and you may have to compromise and get things that don't quite work the way you expect. And by the way, of course, the price is going up too, and that's the other factor, I think, in the mix, Edwin. The inflationary pressures, the cost of living, the real cost of living is much higher than the official numbers, quite clearly. And everywhere I look, prices are going up.
Well, that's correct. Prices are going up. You got shrinkflation, and also we got to come up for a name for the goods that are being provided or sold that have expired as well. So that's another type of people are holding on to you could say foods in the fridges or freezers in order to not to because it's just too costly for them to produce. Coffee's almost doubled in price, as I understand it, with regards to that's the raw coffee, that's the coffee beans, and it's only going to get tougher as we move forward. And obviously this is going to impact the greater economy, and it's also going to impact the whole purpose of this podcast is going to property prices, how it impacts, how much of an impact that has, or how sudden, or is it going to be a delayed impact, is all going to obviously be determined by the government policies that are rolled out, and how much more money the government are going to throw at the construction industry and the property sector, in general. And we're already talking about opening up the international borders early, and that's something else that we're going to talk about later on as well. We're going to unpack, and that is all the people that have already got PR, the professionals, and which once again our WeChat chatterers have alluded us to many months ago, of the medical professionals and other types of professionals that have already attained PR, permanent residency, that are ready to hop on a plane and come over to this great land. At the end of the day, it's still a great country, it's still a great nation. I wouldn't live anywhere else in the world. I've traveled around. I wouldn't live anywhere else in the world other than this nation. The only thing that that I wish there was less of is politicians. But hey, we can't have it. We can't have the whole cake and eat it all at once either,
Well, the trouble is we lost a few from New South Wales, and then they dusted off some others and put them in their place. But that didn't work, did it? Now, let's talk about the real estate industry, right? And, coming out of the lockdown and things like V-passes, this is creating a bit of a storm, isn't it?
Well, it is. There's a trainer, Tom Panos, has put out a video, a discussion, I think it was yesterday, and I was able to send that part of a snippet of that, and I'm sure you're going to sort of share the full video link where Tom talks about what the REI New South Wales is proposing, or is really pushing the industry to do. And
a new COVID safety plan has basically said that effective from Monday, at open for inspections, you have to actually check to see that people have a vaccination passport, and that it is the role of the real estate agent to actually police that. I'm going to make that clear again. So in yesterday's video, that information wasn't at hand. A decision has been made since then, which is contrary to the public health order, and that is that the COVID safety plan for a real estate agent says that they must ensure that people that enter and open for inspection are fully vaccinated. A phone call was coming through there. That will be very interesting, because it's going to mean real estate agents are going to become the policemen at the door.
And effectively, the agents, the selling agents, are going to be the watchdogs. And basically, if you don't have a VP, you're not going to be able to enter property. And that in itself is going to create a lot of issues in the industry. Look, 40% of the people, at least 40% of the agents that I know in the industry, refuse to take the jab, and for various reasons. So it's already creating a stir. It's going to create issues with buyers, but it's also going to create issues with the greater community, which is also the renters market, and we've got strata complexes as well. So there's a lot to unpack in what the government is mandating businesses or industries to do on their behalf, to be the watchdogs for this, whether you consider it BS policy, or whether you consider it fair and equitable, whether you consider it a good policy for watching over the community, whichever way. But it, at the end of the day, it should not be left to the industry bodies and the industry groups to be the watchdogs for the government. The government have got, we put them in place for a reason, and they've got they've got officers to take care of that. But no, it's been thrown into chaos, because they're expecting the private sector to do all the all the checks and balances. And I think with the property industry, I really see punch ups. It's already heated enough as it is. It's very emotional, very emotionally charged when selling, when buying, when renting, when leasing. It's something that's just added more fireworks, or added more gelignite dynamite into the mix, which is rather concerning.
Yeah, and the interesting question, of course, is that, you know, maybe some of the agents won't be vaxxed themselves, but they're actually being asked to impose a standard on those wanting to view property. But on what legal basis, right? And if they do bar somebody because they aren't certified appropriately, and it gets, you know, a bit heated, people get hurt. This is really weird.
Look, it is. It's so convoluted. And again, I think the general populace would be more accepting of the BS that's going on. When I say more accepting, I mean it'll be less heat. There'll be less heated arguments on all the types of social media platforms and across all, you know, across many dining room tables, you know, chats that I'm sure people are having at home. If the politicians weren't as two-faced as what they are. Look at what's happening down in Victoria with Chairman Dan, Robbie's mate, with regards to perusing, trouncing around without a mask, and yet he's the one that's pushing the police force to beat up on civilians if they're not wearing a mask. You know, you're charge them before, or you know, come down hard on them before you find out what they're doing out there. So without going further into that. And this is the whole thing. This is the whole hypocrisy that we've stepped into. And now the industry, the real estate industry, is going to have a wake-up call. And as I said, I believe that 30 to 40% of the greater industry body will refuse or at this point in time, the people that I know, and I know a lot of people in the industry, they are refusing to be jabbed. And yet they're holding open for inspections. And that's one of the tweets that I put up today, is that my clients have been told in no uncertain terms that unless they are double vaxxed and unless they hold a certificate, they will not be able to conduct the pre-settlement inspection, which is absolutely ludicrous. And I know for a fact that the agent that that we bought the home from is doing his own research with regards to the vaccine at the moment, you know, is refusing to take it. But yet they will sit with him, around the table, around the dining room table, and liaise with him and talk with him and everything else. And he hasn't told them that he's not, that he hasn't even had one jab, let alone two, and let alone hold their VP. So, I mean, this is the whole hypocrisy, and this is what's going on out there, Martin. But in how it's going to continue to unfold, it's anybody's guess. Other than what I can see, it is a lot of trouble, a lot of potential suits, lawsuits, moving forward, and police being called in left, right, and centre.
Well, you know the old saying about don't do as I do as I say, right? I think there's a fair amount of that flying around at the moment.
Well, there is.
Yeah, crazy, really. Now let's move on then to talk about this issue of priority visas being thrown out there, and nurses and doctors and other people being offered priority access.
Well, this is what we alluded to before, and this is what the WeChat chatterers have pretty much been saying for the last 6 months, or perhaps even longer. And they knew of the people that were getting ready, getting prepared. Obviously, when we talk about the WeChat chatterers, some people have reached out to me on direct messaging on Twitter and said, "Yeah, who are these WeChat chatterers?" Well, it's predominantly Chinese, the Chinese community that are abroad, people that have left China decades ago, and it's a platform that's rolled out from mainland China. We can obviously subscribe to it like Facebook, except it's pretty much every social media platform that you can think of, it's rolled into one, which is WeChat. And plus, on top of that, it also controls the flow of money, the flow of funds, and it's a banking system. So it's really, it's a powerful thing. And you've got these groups in this platform that form WeChat groups, and they're the ones that you and I call the WeChat chatterers, Martin. And it's in these groups that have each group is, I believe it's only about 500. And now it's you can only have 500 people in the group. But obviously these are the groups that we monitor, or our extended team monitors over in America, New Zealand, Europe, Asia, China, and like you locally as well. And we're able to gather information, and they are very, very vocal in what they're saying. So, yeah, so this is now coming to light, you know, with regards to the with what's happening now, particularly because of the mandates that are at play, and professionals are refusing to be vaxxed and are walking away from the post, or in other circumstances they're actually being sacked, and now the Australian government were already issuing PR visas, permanent residency visas, to professionals in other parts of the world. And, you know, I think, you know, last, you know, the figures that were being thrown around were in the hundreds of thousands that have already obtained PR visas, professionals that are ready, willing and able to come to Australia to work, because they'll forego any issues that we may think, you know, are related to the jab. They'll forego that because they're looking at the greater picture of bringing the whole family to a safer environment than what they're experiencing particularly in America and Canada.
The interesting thing, of course, is the flow and effect, right? Because there will be relatively affluent people, quite often, who will be buying property and buying property at the top end of the market.
Well, that's correct. And they're not going to consider, they're not going to pay too much attention to the price point, because they're going to be, these are people that are going to be coming in that are flush with cash. Now we've been able to assist our team and our greater team have been able to assist quite a number of expats that are being overseas in Asian countries and in America that have come back or in the process of coming back to Australia, where, you know, they're not coming in with 10% deposits, Martin. They're coming in with 30-40% LVRs. 50% is the majority of LVRs, and as again I say, they're foregoing what we may consider to be overpriced property. They're foregoing all those thoughts because they're looking more at the long-term safety aspect for their family. These are people that think generationally. They don't think many do think in Australia, and that is, you know, have a short-term view on things. These are people that think long-term, think generationally, and they think, so they're aspiring for more safety, and they will pay the price for safety. So with regards to pricing, it is going to be something that, although we're seeing the number of listings go up, and it's going to put a bit of pressure on. A bit of pressure on those high increment price rises that we've been experiencing. It's going to put a bit of downward pressure on that, which is a welcome relief for the local people that are trying to come into the market, buy the first property, particularly the first principal place of residence, or they're downsizing or upsizing. They're under a lot of pressure, but it's going to be a welcome relief with the numbers. But however, that's going to be that's going to be short-lived, I feel, once the international borders come up, because these families that are coming in with they are flush with cash and they've got deep pockets, and they will make those sacrifices that unfortunately many are still refusing to make here in Sydney, and that is looking a little bit further afield to get a bit more bang for your buck, rather than trying to aspire to be closer to the city and pay silly prices for homes that are being fully renovated. These people are just going to basically, they're going to want space. They're going to want space. And the other thing that we've also shared many months ago with regards because I've also got a lot of family in the States. So I know what, some of my family, they're happy to commute an hour and 15 minutes. They're already commuting an hour and 15 minutes to the workplaces anyway. So for people that are coming into Sydney to live on the outskirts of Sydney or further afield and commute that hour and 15 minutes, it's just normal except they're going to get a much bigger bang for the buck with what they're going to be able to buy further out.
Absolutely. No, it really does, I think, give another explanation as to why some areas are booming. Of course, down in Victoria, did you see, like, end of last week, they've decided to go into shared equity. So now the Victorian government is dangling the carrot of, a proportion of the property which will actually be owned by the taxpayer, right, to allow people to get into the market. So that's another example of a government throwing more money into the system to try and actually support another bit of the property market. Another example of another distortion, right? And wherever I look, I keep seeing distortions all over the property market.
Well, that's correct. And again, you look at if the governments, the state governments, were more focused on decentralizing. Look, in the mid 80s. I think it was in the early 80s, Neville Wran had a great idea, and that was to build the second biggest city of New South Wales, which was going to be over the mountains in Orange. We can have all sorts of discussions around that as to any things that were associated with that and everything, but we've never really been focused on decentralizing, and the powers that be have always controlled it and always try to keep it closer to the North Shore and closer to the infrastructure, closer to the North Shore and closer to the eastern suburbs. The latest classic example, which I was pining on and drumming on from 8 years ago, was when there was preparations being made for the new CBA headquarters to be built in just on the outskirts of Redfern. I mean, that was ludicrous. I mean, we took something like 7,000 jobs from Parramatta, and 2,500 from Homebush, and they built this purpose-built building for the CBA. They're at near Redfern there, why couldn't it have been built further out west? And why isn't the infrastructure being supported? Why the reason why you don't get good and proper subdivisions further out west and where there's land, where there's space, is because the infrastructure doesn't flow that way. All roads, all infrastructure point to the CBD, and that's what they wanted all to happen. We've spoken about this years ago when we did that show. All roads points to the CBD. Where you look at the M4, M2, M5, the M1, everything's all points to the back to the CBD. And this notion that the second international airport going to be built at Badgerys Creek and everything, that's just going to be it's going to be a white elephant, because to date I have not read and I have not seen, unless it's happened in the last 6 months, because that I've the proposal as to how they're going to transport the fuel from Kurnell to Badgerys Creek. So until that's put in place, and until that's realized, as far as I'm concerned, it's just another dud. It's something that's not going to happen, because of all the things that have already been built around the current airport that we have, and the plans that have been in place since the late 60s for the fourth and fifth runway.
I have this theory that I use carrier pigeons. There you go. That might work. Don't know. Might be unfortunate if they go too near the power lines, though.
Yeah, look, it's all interesting. But then again, look at what this whole pandemic has done, Martin. With regards to air traffic, with regards to, if anything, shipping's increased, and trucking has almost quadrupled in size with regards to, but obviously air traffic has come to a standstill for almost 2 years. And the interesting thing that I was thinking over the weekend, as I was building the second raised veggie bed, Martin, was I was thinking these poor bastards that are bought in the that got conned and bought in the fly parts that we used to avoid buying along, and they bought because everything's nice and quiet and they can hear the birds chirping. Whereas in from 2019, you could sometimes you couldn't hear the person next to you talking to you or the auctioneer because there were one plane after another coming down to land or taking off.
Yeah, it's very interesting. One of the things I often say to people is, have you checked the flight paths, right? Because, obviously the flight paths move depending a little bit on the weather, right, whether they're coming in from the south or whether they're coming in, further around from the north or on the cross runways, at Sydney Airport, an example. But you're right. If you've bought close into the city under the flight path in the last 18 months or so, you've been lulled into a complete sense of full security.
That's right. On top of everything else that you've been conned into or hasn't been disclosed, so it's again, it's just one of those, one of those things. Caveat emptor, buyer beware, and the onus, the onus really is on you. But again, going back to what the state governments have and haven't done. With regards to infrastructure, I mean, we go hell for leather to build sporting stadiums. We go hell for leather to build all sorts of recreational facilities. But what about the hospitals? What about the schools? What about the real infrastructure? Yeah, we can catch public transport, but first of all, you have to walk 10 kilometers, or you have to walk 4 kilometers to the nearest bus stop, and if you miss your bus. Poor you. Now you have to wait another hour, but obviously you can't wait another hour. So then you have to hail down a cab or an Uber to get you to the station. That now you've missed the train to get you to. You missed the fast train to get into the city or to get into a central hub to work. See, this whole thing that the state governments don't look at if they were really serious, but yet they'll throw money at. New first home owners grants, they'll throw money at the construction industry, the sector, in order to build this build to rent crap that's supposed to accommodate young families. All these band-aid solutions and throwing money at things that don't create longevity, that don't create sustainability, and don't promote a good living standard or accommodation for the young families, Martin. And it's absolutely flabbergasting what goes on.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that we saw in the New Daily today, Alan Kohler wrote a piece. He was referring to some of the submissions to the current housing affordability inquiry that's going on. And he basically concluded that this thing has been politicised to bilio for years and years and years, which is why we've got a really, broken property system. And he basically said, look, unless you're actually going to really want to change it from the ground up, there's no hope. And I think he's right. And I, in my submission, actually made the point of how politicized this whole thing is, how tactical all of the solutions being thrown around are, and nobody wants to address the really important structural issues, which, includes planning infrastructure, it includes lending standards and supply of credit and all those things, and public housing. I mean, there is some joined up thinking that needs to be done, but frankly, nobody wants to do it. And, of course, nobody wants to be in charge when property prices slide, because that's going to be, politically speaking, terminal from an election point of view. So what they want to do is to do anything they possibly can to talk up property and to talk up the wealth. Unfortunately, it doesn't solve anything.
No, it doesn't. And we go back to the family unit. We go back to the to providing a safe environment and a healthy environment with regards to with living standards. And we're not doing that. And yet we're trying to deal with a pandemic on the one hand, and building these shoe boxes on the other. That if you don't listen, if that little bug from China doesn't get you, the bugs that we breed here in these high rise developments will, or the bugs that are in the old dwellings. Where the asbestos and all the other toxins haven't been remediated properly, they'll get you. So, yeah, it's a lose-lose-lose situation. And again, it's because our governments, our political structure is based on short-term views, short-term policies, and what can I do in order to get re-elected, as opposed to long-term, planning and infrastructure that will support and that will look after the constituents. That they're not interested. They're not interested. And you see it over and over again, the hypocrisy on TV. But all this is going to come to an end one way or another, because now we've also got the commissioner that the government put in charge, the building commissioner. He's really going hell for leather there. And now we've got the report in the Domain saying that 4 in 10, not 2 in 10, not 1 in 10, but 4 in 10 new apartment complexes have major defects, not minor defects, but major defects.
Absolutely. Well, we've been talking about this for some time, and we touched on it last week as well. And, what's interesting, of course, is that there are a few reports now coupled with this that some of those high-rise buildings were being built by Chinese-funded and Chinese-populated and supported construction companies. They've suddenly started disappearing. So, it's all coming out, isn't it?
Well, this is what's going to bite the government in the backside, and things are going to come unstuck. Rather than supporting the communities further out from the CBDs. The communities that need support and where you can have, proper, sustainable, in my opinion, you'll get a better environmentally friendlier dwellings built further out than what you do with these high rise. People don't understand how much it takes to build these things, how much energy, how much energy they consume ongoing, and how much strain, extra strain is placed on the, on the waterways, on the sewer lines, on the power grid and everything, because all this has got to be, it just creates this mass pull and draw, and we don't release the land that could be released further out to have better sustainable lifestyles for younger families and long term have less pressure on the health system as well.
Yep, and more room to grow carrots, which of course is really, really important, right?
Well, exactly. You can reduce your you can go turn more into a vegetarian or a vegan if you really want to go all that way, as opposed to a meat eater, because those damn cows, they flagellate, they give out those toxic air, so we'd be eating less meat. Think of it. I mean, it's another solution, Martin. You should email the new premier with that point.
Absolutely. And one last point on this construction issue, of course, the owners' corporations are actually responsible once the building is finished and up and running, right? But the question is, can the owners' corporations actually grab enough cash to be able to actually cover the ongoing running costs and the remediation costs of these significant issues that are emerging? And what happens when they don't?
Well, what happens when they don't is the ones that that they can grab, they foot the bill, and as we've spoken before, the strata managers that look after the body corporates that look after these buildings, effectively start taking legal action, and that's very, very costly. So at the end of the day, the poor bastards that can get a hold of that do live locally, they are the ones that foot the bill, and the strata levies go from $1,500 a quarter, if it's a one-bedroom apartment, to, in some cases I've seen them go all the way up to $2,500 a quarter to make up for a lot of difference. And on top of that, you've got your special levies as well. So then it comes to a point where, if the reports and the issues are as bad as what the reports are saying that they are, look, it's only a matter of time, and it's only going to be a short period before a lot of these apartments will be uninhabitable, because one, you can't, if you don't have funds to maintain your common areas and to maintain the lifts, well then you can't live there. Yeah, there are other issues that will affect people and will preclude or will prohibit people from occupying these buildings. They don't necessarily have to sink in order to be for them to be uninhabitable. Now we've also got this issue with this little bug, this COVID, that the strata managers have now have to implement new measures in order to look after the common areas, Martin. People really haven't thought about this yet. I mean, then you've got the services, that you've got the waste, the disposal of waste, the garden areas, the hallways, the lifts, and it just goes on and on and on and on. And this is where this is all going to come and collapse into a heap. With a lot of these apartments, a lot of these complexes, which I've put out videos from over 10 years ago, which I started calling them the million-dollar ghettos, and that's what they will become, the million-dollar ghettos.
Absolutely, and that point, of course, with the owners' corporation, because they will have accountability for the common areas, which means they've got accountability for COVID control and management in those areas. And as we said earlier on, who's checking as to who is, double jabbed and who isn't, and who's going in and going out. Oh, it's absolute minefield, no doubt about that. Now, before we finish, tip of the week, and this is a real doozy.
Well, look. Obviously, this is something that, again, it's a general tip, but I'm going to try and clarify it as I go. So basically, look, we're in a situation where agents, and even on the extended video that Tom Panos put out, even he speaks about the rising number of listings on market for sale in Sydney, right? So this is a point where now, if you're looking for a home to buy, you can basically go in hard and not go stupid, but put a reasonable low offer in on a property, but then just talk about it. I mean, I'm talking about, and if you like the pro, I'm talking about an offer, in writing, contractually, or even offering what's called the 66W, waive your cooling off period after you've had your conveyancer, your solicitor, vet the contract, and you've done all your checks and balances, of course, and go in hard, go in fast, because at the moment, this is what's going through the selling agent's mind, right? They're also conscious of the fact that there are more listings come on market. Obviously, the sooner they sell the properties, the quicker they get the commission, the quicker they get paid. So if there's a lot more properties coming on the market in a particular region, a particular suburb, well, that means that their listings are going to wane a little bit longer on market. So they're not going to pay the bills. They're going to go out and buy another Pierre Cardin pair of shoes. They're going to have to put that off for another few more weeks, which they don't want to do that. So this is where you can start playing that, adopting a bit of psychology. So go in fast, go in hard with those low offers, but don't be too stupid. Don't be too, give an offer where they're just going to fob you away. It's got to be something that's going to be attractive, lower or around the guide that they've given you, knowing that the guides that they're giving people, are not the real representation of what the vendor's expectations are. So if you go in around there, then because the selling agent, they're going to be saying to the vendor words to the effect, look, Mr. and Mrs. Vendor, in this marketplace where there's more listings coming on market, the market's going to be flooded. Look at what Tom Panos is saying. This is the video. Have a listen for yourself. And by the way, in this type of markets, first offer is generally the best offer. And that is the story that the selling agents are going to be telling their clients, which is not necessarily true, but you got to utilize that. And I think that window of opportunity is going to be short As more listings come on market. Now, we've had last week, or from 4 weeks ago, we actually broke the 5,000 barrier. We went down to 4,960 or 64. Now we're back up to 5,796 or thereabouts. So we're getting closer to the 6,000. And I feel the next week or two, we could end up with an extra 1,000 properties on the market. We're going to be closer to the numbers that we were spring last year, which is a good thing, because that's going to have a negative effect on those that are that are selling, negative impact on those that are selling. But it's a positive thing for those of you that are going to be buying. So that's my tip of the week, Martin, and I hope people can use it, but use it wisely.
Yeah, very interesting. And two points there. The first is, of course, you can do this prior to an auction, can't you? As well as for a private sale. Absolutely. Definitely. Second point is that with the unlocking, you would expect more properties now to start coming on the market anyway, right? In Sydney and the surrounding areas, because we know that there's a lot of people been hanging off, waiting for the lockdowns to ease back before they bring their property on the market. And that also is at the same time as many property investors are still trying to get out, particularly in the high-rise sector, because they just can't make it work from an investment perspective. So, well, for all those reasons, you can expect to see higher listings ahead. So be smart and try the strategies. You say don't go in stupidly low, but if you go in with a good, reasonable offer and you show real willingness, in other words, not just a verbal thing, but something in writing that you've actually prepared about and thought about, can be very powerful.
It's a very powerful, but like, again, I'll say, and I emphasize, it's going to be short, a short period, because once the narrative changes to the international borders opening up, don't forget, it's not about when it happens. It's about the psychology or the talk that the selling agents are telling their vendors. So, the better agents will basically wait for the for a much better offer and everything. But look, it's a 50-50. It's a toss of a coin. So it's a 50-50 chance. And hopefully some of our followers will have great results. And we'll be able to email you and let you know the gains that they've had because they've used this tip, Martin.
Yeah, okay. Well, Edwin, thanks for that tip. Very good indeed. And I hope that the 50-50 bet is a little bit more weighing in your favour when it comes to those carrots and those potatoes, right? I hope you get some really good stuff coming through in due course. I had a few people expressing great concern about the fact that you've got such deep beds.
Well, it's... look, I had to do... I'm just... Look, I'm just following some YouTubers, mate, and I'm making shit up as I go.
Yeah,
because they are deep. Look, I know that they're going to sink, and the reason why I made them high is because obviously it's easier to manage, and I've got the room to do it. Some have asked me why don't I just sort of plant directly onto the ground? I think this form of planting works better for us because the ground isn't as good as what a lot of people would like to think it is in the mountains. It's very very sandy, very there's a lot of sandstone around and everything. It's not the best the best, and I don't want the good soil to leach away into with the rains but the deep a lot of this rubble that I've got around the place. Don't forget, I'm also trying to be good in relation to renewables and recycling, and rather than dumping a lot of this stuff onto skip bins, I'm basically putting them in at the base. The old bricks, the old corrugated iron, I'm using them aside. So rather than buying new, rather than getting it, I'm just trying to recycle as much as I can around the land and make use of it. I'll set up some compost areas as well, bays nearby, so as I could, rather than throwing things away, rather than putting them in the bin, I can just, just become a little bit more sustainable. So with this, so being a little bit more conscious, doing my bit for the environment.
Well, Dan, I'll just remind you on this that, of course, if you're going to grow 1 meter long carrots, right, then you need to have 1 meter high beds. Well, so I expect to see very long carrots.
Yeah, well, not look, it's not all, obviously, a lot of it's rubble, a lot of it's stone that I would have otherwise put in a skip bin. And look, in the first raised bed, most of the rubble that you know, it's one third of the height of the bed. Most of it is what came out of the ground of the bathroom / laundry in the main house that I'm currently renovating. So rather than dumping that and taking it to the tip, costly, you know, I'm using it as the base for the raised bed I'm just trying all sorts of different things. I'll just see what works. Bit of trial and error.
Yeah, make it up as you go along. Sounds perfect to me. And you know, if you find that you get carrots with funny shapes, you'll know that they've hit the rubble.
Well, look, I'm hoping that I get funny carrots with funny shapes, and also capsicums and tomatoes, and I'll put it on eBay. And who knows? I mean, some of those chips that I've seen on eBay fetch, you know, thousands of dollars because they've, you know, because of the supernatural imagery that they've got or whatever. So
give it a go.
Exactly. Just got to try everything.
Absolutely, Edwin. Thanks very much for your time. As always, great to catch up with you once again. And I guess we'll do it all again next week.
Definitely, Martin. As long as we're still here, and hopefully I'll be doing it with our and won't have a black eye.
Very good. Okay. See you then. Cheers. Bye-bye.